today. As I was your host, Evan Sutter, joined by no one today. Actually, Brennan's not here, but Anthony Puccio of Nets Daily, who I've been following along with for Twitter for a while. We've been in the works to get him on the show last year with Brooklyn. It didn't work out, but this year we definitely wanted to get him on. And he's someone I followed along with for a while. We're around the same age, actually. He just graduated from college. So before we can get into any coverage today, Anthony, why don't you just let people know about yourself and what you do?
First off, Evan, long overdue and glad to be on. I've been covering the Brooklyn Nets for the past 6 seasons. Write social media, do all the things that you could possibly do close to the team. So you could check out my work at netsdaily.com. I also contribute at the Associated Press. So, you can find me anywhere on social media. Just type in Pooch like a dog.
There you go. Yeah, follow him on Twitter if you're not already, at A Pooch. So let's get it right into it. We'll start off with the Brooklyn Nets and just their overall preview and looking ahead. And then later into the show, we'll talk about the matchup of the Suns and Nets tomorrow night at Target Resort Arena. But Anthony, I find it really different, so to say, because all of a sudden, when they got Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, I was excited. That was around when we were like in high school or something like that. And I thought the Nets would be an immediate contender. Turns out it didn't work out that way. It kind of ruined their franchise for the next 5 years. But all of a sudden, they got Sean Marks in there, and they developed two late first-round picks and Jared Allen and Caris LeVert. It's rare you see not only one guy, but possibly two guys in the 20s become two of your main foundational pieces.
Yeah, I think when you look back to those days with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, it was a little bit forced, right? A little bit forced. They're trying to do something and make a great team out of, wasting all their assets, whereas now there's somebody like Sean Marks who comes in and wants to start from the bottom up. He's been preaching a slow rebuild from the start. He doesn't want to skip any steps, because if they skip steps, they'll find themselves in the same situation that they were in not 4 or 5 years ago, like you just mentioned. So, you look at guys like Caris LeVert, who you did get in the 20s. You look at somebody like Jared Allen, who you did get in the 20s. But it's the other guys, right? The other poster childs for this development staff, which are like Spencer Dinwiddie, who they plucked out of the G League after a stint with the Pistons and Bulls. You look at a Joe Harris, who played with the Cavaliers for 2 years, but was with their G League team for most of his time there too. So, you look at those two guys. You turn nothing into something, and basically that's what this team's identity has been since Marks has taken over, since Atkinson has taken over as coach, right? So it's been up to Marks to find that hidden talent and up to Atkinson to really develop it. So again, that's kind of the identity right now, and so far the rebuild looks good. It's time that they start turning it into wins.
Do you think it's more of a slow rebuild than you have hoped for, or do you think they're on the right track so far?
I think they're on the right track. I think you have to ask me that question come February. But, Evan, you got to look again. You look at where they were a couple of years ago when they gave up all their picks and they had no salary cap space. They had very few assets to trade or do anything with. So just the idea that they do have those draft picks, they have their own for the first time in so long. They have $50 to $70 million to spend this upcoming summer, and they do have a lot of young assets that somebody might want to play with. So the idea that they're even in this conversation, the fact that they're back towards respectability, I think you have to say that the rebuild has been successful.
I'd be remiss not to ask you, just because he's such a polarizing topic in the NBA right now. It's Jimmy Butler, and we saw immediately right after that happened that Jimmy Butler's preferred destination is Brooklyn was on that list, Anthony. So are you surprised that Sean Marks hasn't circled back around here and tried to get in on the sweepstakes for Jimmy Butler, or do you think they're playing the long game and maybe possibly even not interested in a guy like Jimmy Butler?
I think they're playing the long game. I think that Sean Marks is no fool, and we obviously have heard so many things about Minnesota wanting too much. From the Nets' end, I know that they wanted Caris LeVert, and the Nets wanted no part to do with that. They did not want to give up Caris LeVert for somebody who is going to be a free agent at the end of the year, and rightfully so. So I think, I don't think the Nets have spoken to the Timberwolves in weeks and a month, but, they're going to stay fluid. I'm sure if the Wolves come calling back and, they're not asking for Caris LeVert or Jared Allen, then we could see maybe a sneaky trade from the Nets. But I wouldn't anticipate something.
I guess if you were in Sean Marks' shoes, what would you do in that scenario? Would you be aggressive and go after Jimmy Butler, or do you think he's not the right piece?
I think Jimmy Butler would be a great fit in Brooklyn. I know he has his character issues or whatever people are saying, but he's a player that works hard. He grinds. He seems like somebody that would fit really well in Kenny Atkinson's system. With that being said, I would not give up Caris LeVert and Jared Allen. I mean, maybe some of the other guys on the roster they could work with, but I really don't think LeVert or Allen are worth giving up, and that's what ultimately the Timberwolves are going to want.
Yeah, that's totally true, and I think from that standpoint, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to do a trade, maybe outright sign him in the summer. I guess we can look ahead a little bit here to the summer for the Brooklyn Nets. You have two max slots for the first time, and I can't remember when. It's been a long time, and thinking about just the overall appeal of Brooklyn, you have the big market there in New York, but the talent is there. It's starting to bubble up a little bit. How do you sell a team like Brooklyn compared to other teams that are going to have possibly two max slots like the Clippers? The Knicks will obviously have max cap space as well. How do you compete with those guys?
So yeah, they're gonna have two max slots for a free agency this upcoming summer. But you know, like you mentioned, they're in that New York City market. You know, Brooklyn is a city like no other. They have a lot of amenities and things like that that I know people keep pushing. The Nets keep pushing, like just top luxury practice facility, beautiful arena, things like that. And you know, a lot of teams can say that. So where does it come down to with the basketball team? You look at Kenny Atkinson and the staff. Like I mentioned before, they developed a guy like Joe Harris, somebody who nobody knew about. He was basically out of the league. They made something out of Spencer Dinwiddie, right? So you know that you can come to Brooklyn and not only win some games behind maybe if this core shows that they're capable, but not only can you join Brooklyn and see if you can win games, but you know that you're going to get better and you're going to be treated first class. And you know, Jared Dudley, who's been in the league for 12 years, constantly says the Brooklyn Nets, the training staff, the practice facility, he keeps pointing at things like that and saying that it's the best that he's dealt with in the NBA. A couple of years ago, Louis Scola's first season with Brooklyn and Kenny Atkinson's first season in Brooklyn, he said, when the Nets are good or the Nets are relevant and start winning games, they'll be able to get whoever they want. So I think everything else is there. It's just a matter of these guys proving that they're worthy of bringing in a big star that you know, they could win some games.
I'm glad you brought up Jared Dudley because he was a guy I talked to a lot in the locker room last year. He's such a fun guy to talk to. And also Alan Williams is on there. He's with the Long Island Nets. But two guys from the Suns organization now in Brooklyn. What's it like covering those guys and talking to them?
Well, like you mentioned, Alan Williams is kind of up and down, so we haven't gotten much time with him. But with Jared Dudley, it's a lot of fun. You know, his basketball IQ is obviously through the roof. The fact that he's been so many places and seen so many things, it's really a joy to see somebody like that work in the locker room. One of my first impressions of him is that his locker is right next to Jared Allen. So before one of the games, I think it was their first home game, I just heard Jared Dudley and Jared Allen's ear, like, look, you know, they're not going to want to switch so-and-so on you and this and that, and just getting in his head and being that veteran leader that they need. So, you know, a lot of people didn't think he was going to have a role on this team. A lot of people thought the Nets might buy him out, but look, he's starting. He's starting through the first 10 games of the season because he could stretch the floor and he brings that basketball IQ. So I think I really do find Jared Dudley to be a joy to watch and obviously, like you mentioned, talk to as well.
Were you surprised, just obviously you wouldn't know right away after the deal happened, but are you surprised about just Jared Dudley taking on as big as a role as he has in Brooklyn so far? Because even in Phoenix, he was never starting this many games or even getting this many minutes.
I wasn't too surprised, only because the Nets don't have that many stretch bigs. He and Damari Carroll are really the only, you know, stretch bigs that they have, if you even want to consider them bigs. But, with Damari Carroll being hurt, Kenny Atkinson wants to have four guys on the floor that could shoot. You know, this is a team that wants to shoot 43-pointers a game. So I got to be honest, I'm not surprised at all. Just like I said, considering the circumstances. And Kenny Atkinson has always liked playing a veteran leader with the younger guys. So really, he had a very smooth transition, believe it or not.
Circling back around here, just to Jared Allen, because I find him such an intriguing prospect and someone who I think is going to be a star in this league sometime soon, almost like a Rudy Gobert Defensive Player of the Year upside with him. Do you see the same with him, and how do you see him blossoming so far in the last 18 months of his career?
Oh, man, you can't say enough about Jared Allen. And, you know, every time you bring him up to Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks, they just start smiling ear to ear. I agree with you on the Rudy Gobert thing. Clint Capella-esque, really just a solid basketball player. He's so young, but he's showing signs of really being an all-star in the future. And, again, like the little things, the lobs and blocks and lobs and blocks, whatever you want to call it, running the floor, setting good picks, being a smart basketball player. I think it's, you know, it's going to take some time for him to really get where they want him to be in terms of, you know, building his strength and not getting bullied. There's been guys that are bigger than him, right? Like an Enes Kanter or Embiid. But you know, look, he's 20 years old. He's the second youngest player on the Nets. And obviously, like I said, they think so highly of him. So I'm excited to see where he goes. He has to keep getting stronger. He's working on his three-point shot right now. He's hit a couple this season. So if he could even stretch the floor a little bit, if he could hit one a game, one every other game, just that alone is so important. So, again, he's like a human highlight reel this season.
Yeah, Jared Allen's a super fun guy to watch. You haven't followed him. He's a league pass kind of guy to follow. He's highlights everywhere on both sides of the floor. But another few guys I wanted to ask you about before we go into our game preview is just the point guards you have, and that's Spencer Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell. And I've noticed a lot of Suns fans have been paying close attention to what's going on in Brooklyn, because the Suns have no starting quality point guard on their roster. I don't consider Isaiah Cannon to be that, even though he's been solid in the minutes he's produced. But Spencer Dinwiddie or D'Angelo Russell, I think, make a lot of sense in Phoenix. So what have you seen out of those guys so far, and what do you think is the long-term plans of those two?
It's tough, Evan, because both of them are due for an extension this season. So Spencer Dinwiddie has – the Nets have until December 8th to decide whether they want to extend him, guarantee him. I believe he's worth 4 over 48 at the max. And then D'Angelo Russell, obviously, at the end of the season is a restricted free agent. And I don't know – you know, I don't know how much they value him versus other teams. So it's a really interesting situation in Brooklyn right now, because nobody knows really who they're going to stick with, especially since they want to keep those two max slots that they have. So with all that being said, in terms of their play, D'Angelo Russell has already sat out in crunch time in three games. He's looked good, but, you know, he has these flashes where he plays well, and then, the next game he's kind of quiet and his defense is too slow to cover the opposing point guard. So Kenny Atkinson is put in a bad situation. So he sits him late in the game, and D'Angelo doesn't really have a chance to redeem himself or do anything like that. So I wouldn't say he's been a disappointment early. It's just been so weird to see, you know, one of their best players on the bench. But then you look on the other side, and you look at Spencer Dinwiddie, who you kind of know what you're going to get out of him every night. He's a steady, consistent point guard who doesn't turn the ball over. He knows how Kenny Atkinson wants to run the offense. He's not the greatest defensive player either. He's right up there with D'Lo. They both have a hard time covering the pick and roll. But with Spencer, I think it's that idea that they know what they're going to get. He does have high upside. The other night, he basically won them the game against the Pistons. He did win them the game against Pistons, scoring 25 points in the second half and hitting the game-tying shot to go to overtime, and then the game-winning shot to go to overtime. So I've seen a lot more faith in Spencer Dinwiddie than D'Angelo Russell from the coaching staff. So, you know, as a Suns fan, I would definitely monitor that as the season goes on.
I guess from your point of view, I posed this question on Twitter. I got some feedback from both sides. Some Nets fans chimed in, probably from somewhere, and then some Suns fans also chimed in. What do you think about a Josh Jackson for D'Angelo Russell swap? Because it seems like that could intrigue Brooklyn, because that's a former top five pick who in Kenny Atkinson's system could really thrive. Especially if Mikal Bridges keeps doing what he's doing, I think he's the odd man out in that rotation. But D'Angelo Russell, best friends with Devin Booker as well, I think it makes a lot of sense. Defensively, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but scoring-wise with him and DeAndre Ayton, that could be fun. So what do you think about those two former top five picks swapping places here in a couple months? Does that make sense to you?
I don't know if it makes sense for Sean Marks. Honestly, I don't know. I don't think that they would give up D'Lo that easily, especially since Josh Jackson has been pretty disappointing, obviously, to say the least. He hasn't shown that he could hit the three ball on a consistent rate. And the Nets, if they're going to trade D'Lo for a power forward, I would imagine that it's a young guy that could spread the floor a little bit. But look, I mean, I think the idea of D'Lo and Devin Booker is intriguing. Obviously, your chemistry off the floor is usually translate to the chemistry on the floor, and I think those two are obviously very, very gifted basketball players. But again, a Josh Jackson for D'Angelo Russell trade straight up, I don't think that's realistic. I think the Suns would have to throw in a draft pick or something along those lines.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you there. I think maybe the Bucks pick could maybe get a talk a little bit more, but who do you think, if you had to pick right now, obviously it's very early in the season, small sample size, but who would you roll with past this year between those two guys?
Oh, that's a tough question. Again, it's so tough, like, because I think D'Angelo Russell has more upside in terms of scoring and just giving you that quick 28, like, without even realizing it, where Spencer Dinwiddie will give you that 13, 14 points with no turnovers and you know, six assists. You know, again, just knowing what you're going to get from Dinwiddie. I had an interesting conversation with somebody about this, actually. Spencer Dinwiddie is like everything that the Brooklyn Nets are. He epitomizes everything that they want to be. You know, he came from nothing, like I mentioned earlier, and he worked his tail off to get where he is. You know, he was never a top lottery pick like D'Angelo was. He didn't have the hype around him. Nobody really knew who he was until he got to Brooklyn. So the fact that, and, you know, without it being said, that he has a great, great personality, great basketball IQ, and is just a good character overall. Again, something that the Brooklyn Nets want. And that's not to say that D'Angelo isn't. I think it's just that with Spencer, they feel like he's their own. He's basically homegrown. He's somebody that Kenny Atkinson and the staff works with, and he continues to get better. His stock continues to rise, while D'Angelo, it's not that he's getting worse or he's not playing good. It's just that he's kind of stayed very steady since year one, and we don't know exactly if he's – I mean, look, he's only 22 years old, but – you don't know how much better he's going to get. You wonder if he's hit his peak. He had the hype coming into the NBA, being the number two overall pick. So, again, it's hard for me to say right now. I'd like to see the season play out a little bit more because D'Angelo really didn't play a lot last year. So I'd like to see him get at least like 20 more games with these guys before I can make a final assessment on that.
Yeah, that's a fair point there. And like I said, it's something to watch if you're not paying attention to the Nets already. That point guard situation from the Suns' point of view is something to closely monitor. But my final question here before we go to our preview, Anthony, is that what's the overall stock of the Brooklyn Nets for the playoffs down the line? Do you think it's coming this year, or what do you think is the ceiling for this current young core?
I think the ceiling right now is the eighth seed. And look, that's a high task for them because considering where they were last year and the year before, you go from 20 to 28 wins. But, you know, they've dealt with injuries in the past, whereas this year it seems like everyone is healthy right now, and they have a lot more depth with guys like, you know, Shabazz Napier coming off the bench and Ed Davis and just Rondae Hollis-Jefferson being coming off the bench. You know, it's really tough to tell because some nights they look very good. Like last night they beat the Sixers by 25. They played a tight game with Houston, even though James Harden was out two nights before that. They had a win against the Pelicans, and then D'Lo threw the ball out of bounds, and the Pelicans won by 1 point, 2 points that night. They show that they can compete. They just have to close out games. So if they could show that they could close out games, I think the eighth seed is definitely possible. But my realistic expectation for this team is like right outside that area, maybe the 10th seed. 9th or 10th seed, where they compete throughout the season. They stay close enough. They keep their heads above water, but at the end kind of slip up. And you could call that good because they're probably going to improve on that 28-win season last season, but at the same time, they don't get that top five lottery pick that they want. So, you know, you find yourself in a weird state of limbo if they don't make the playoffs this year and they don't tank. So again, my ceiling is the 8th seed. And right now, Evan, through 10 games, they're the 8th seed. So Nets fans are celebrating.
Hey, there you go. It'd be really awesome to see that young core take that step forward. I think, like you said earlier, Jared Allen, Caris LeVert's a solid foundation to grow off of. But I guess for the Suns-Nets game tomorrow, what are you looking most forward to? Because for me, I think it's going to be really fun to see DeAndre against Jared Allen.
You know, I didn't even think about that. But, yeah, you got the two young studs at the center. The obvious answer for me was going to be D'Angelo Russell versus Devin Booker. See how those guys interact on the court and their body language and just the little things like that I like to see with guys that are friends off the floor. But I wish I could say that I've seen more of Ayton this season. But, I think Ayton and Jared Allen, Mikal Bridges and Caris LeVert too, you know, those are two guys I'd like to see go up against one another. So I actually think it's going to be a very close game. I'm calling overtime on it.
Oh, okay. I like that. I think it is going to be definitely a close game because if you look at the Suns' schedule, they have a really rough stretch here. I think 7 straight playoff teams are facing, so this could be the only win they could get over the next few weeks. So if it's a must-win in November, this is definitely a must-win. But another thing I wanted to ask you about this matchup is just the coaching overall, because you mentioned Kenny Atkinson earlier. Igor Kokoschkov kind of has the same sort of mentality, that the grinders mentality about just working hard, being tough, running an innovative system. What's your sense of Kenny Atkinson that you've been around for the past few years?
With Kenny Atkinson, you're going to come in the gym and you're going to work hard. And if that's not the case for you, if you're not the type of player that doesn't want to work hard or whatever it might be, then, you know, you can find yourself out. And I think with him, the biggest thing is that guys do come in and they check their egos at the door. There's no one guy. There's no face of the franchise. There's none of that. You know, whether you think D'Angelo Russell is the best or Caris LeVert is the best, that's just not the way they think. They think of it as a collaborative team effort, obviously. You know, even post-game when we ask him about an individual player, he really doesn't like to talk just one player. He likes to – he may mention one line on the guy and then bring other guys into it somehow. So I just like how team-oriented he is. I like – again, that he checks egos at the door. And really, Kenny Atkinson is the one who – you keep hearing this thing, culture and identity with this Nets team. I think Kenny Atkinson and his staff are the ones who have really set the precedent for this culture. And that's really what I like the most. And again, it goes back to, like you said, just grinding and working hard, because they don't see it as a reset every season. They see it as, okay, this is year 3. That means that we've been working together for 36 months straight. You understand what I'm saying? There's no stoppage just because the season ends. We've been going 36 months. We've been working hard since then, since day one. So here we are now. How have we progressed? And what is our ceiling and things like that? So really intriguing on Kenny Atkinson's part and what he's done with this team. I just hope, you know, for his sake, he's worked hard for it. He deserves some wins because it's absolutely eating him up when the Nets are not winning.
Pivoting back to the Suns here for a second, before we end with our just predictions overall, I know you said overtime earlier, but what do you think of Devin Booker and just his star potential, just as overall as a player? Because he's pretty polarizing outside of Phoenix. I know a lot of Suns fans think he's a star already, but I've seen some people on Twitter say he's just an empty stats kind of guy. I wouldn't blame you if you haven't watched a lot of Phoenix Suns games the past few years, but what's your read from the outside view on a guy like Devin Booker?
I think he's a revolutionary talent. I think you come by a Devin Booker every so often in the NBA, right? Like, he could put the ball in the hoop. I'm not exactly sure how his passing is or other dimensions of his game, but, you know, this is somebody. How old is Devin Booker? 23?
Just turned 22 like 2 days ago.
He's 22 years old, and, you know, we've seen what he can do. We've seen how he could put the ball in the hoop in different ways. So I think Devin Booker is going to be a superstar for many, many years to come. And that's just my opinion. But, you know, I think any Suns fans that don't feel that way are very pessimistic.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think overall, Booker's a guy who's on a superstar path right now. But before we end today's show, Anthony, I know you said overtime, but how do you think the game is going to go overall? Do you sense it's going to be a game of runs, or do you think it's going to be close throughout? How do you see it playing out overall?
I see the Nets getting out to a good start, taking like a 10-12 point lead and letting it slip late in the first, early in the second, and then it just kind of playing out in a tight game the rest of the way. That's kind of how the Nets have played all this whole season. I mentioned earlier that they've been playing well with better teams. They've been playing to the competition, and I want to see if they're able to lift above and elevate above the Suns right now, who are struggling, or if they kind of stoop down and they play at their pace, they play at their level. And again, there's no such thing as an easy win for the Nets by any means. So, you know, I don't want to be taken out of context there, but this is a game, the same way you said it, this is a must-win game if I've ever seen it in November, because the Nets go to Denver on Friday, they go to Golden State on Saturday, and then they see the Timberwolves that following Monday or Tuesday, I believe. So they can't slip too far behind.
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier before we end today's show, I know you just got out of school at St. John's. I don't know why it's spaced there for a second, but you just got out of school at St. John's, and I know we're on the same age, so if you're – I know you posted on Twitter today you're looking for a full-time opportunity, so if anyone out there is listening to this, if you somehow end up in Arizona, it'd be really fun to have you out here, Anthony. I've enjoyed your work for a while, so keep up the great work.
No, Evan, I really appreciate that. Look, any writers and any editorial staffs or social media hiring in Arizona, I'm more than glad to come over there.
Hey, appreciate everyone listening in. That'll be it for today's episode. And as usual, we'll be back to you guys tomorrow to recap the next